Ironically, many people overuse an overuse injury while they're trying to recover from it, pushing back towards normal too hard, too soon. I think that overdoing it is the most common of all training and rehab errors, as thanks to a strong cultural predilection to believe that there is no gain without pain, the need for rest in the early stages of rehab is often underestimated. I don't know this for sure. I don't have a citation for it, and I don't expect to ever have a citation for it, but it's based on a lot of conversations with readers and colleagues on social media and in my email for many, many years. I'm pretty sure that overdoing it is, in fact, the most common of all training and rehab errors. Could be wrong. If it's not the most common, it is very common. There's another kind of error, though. The value of loading it at just the right intensity also gets short shrift. Some people are afraid to push even a little, and that is also a problem. Overuse can go very badly, which understandably makes people shy of using their body. No one wants another stress fracture. Ironically, the same culture that celebrates intensity in rehab also fears wear and tear, way out of proportion to our need to fear wear and tear. For instance, we know from many studies now that even quite a lot of running does not destroy knees with premature arthritis. This fact has spent many years on my top 10 list of things that huge numbers of people still don't know but should. Now, this claim I have citations for, and lots of them. There are 9 here, a whole bunch of citations, a collection that I've been curating for about a decade. And in the web version of this post, all of those citations, all of those footnotes have content. They've got summaries of the papers that I've been working on. Some of those summaries I wrote 10 years ago, and one of them I wrote yesterday. So I'm still working on it. It's a lot of science on that topic. And so we really do know with high confidence that there's just no way that a typical runner is doing any harm to their knees with running. Exercise doesn't wreck joints because tissues generally thrive on stimulation. So let's go one step further. At the right dosage, exercise is actually anti-inflammatory and will probably improve recovery from injury. But getting the dosage right is tricky. This post is a small excerpt from my huge guide to repetitive strain injuries. The members-only section of that article has been recently renovated, especially this topic, and most of the citations that I just mentioned have substantial summaries, any one of which could be a small post unto itself. I want to highlight this because of the crazy amount of work that went into them. It's dozens of hours over several years. The word count of the footnotes here is 3 times the post body. So I'm not going to read them because I think it would be boring and disjointed, even though they're good summaries. But this is a post, if you're interested in the topic, you should visit the post and look at those footnotes. So every overuse injury must eventually, once again, be used. No cartilage, bone, tendon, or muscle can get healthy or stay healthy without some action. But when and how much, and if we get it right, can exercise actually be therapeutic for repetitive strain injury? Can it rush recovery? So tendonitis is inflamed, contrary to what you might have heard on social media. It's inflamed, it's just subtle. It's been a popular thing for about 20 years now for smug know-it-alls to say, actually, tendonitis isn't inflamed. That's just because it's not obviously inflamed in the chronic phase. It isn't red and hot and swollen. It's not like an infection. But it is inflamed, and we've got the science for that now. It's just a different kind of inflammation. It's slower moving. It's a smoldering inflammation instead of a conflagration. Inflammation is basically, you know, immune function at work, and it's incredibly complicated. It is not one thing. It is a whole galaxy of possibilities. There are a lot of ways to be inflamed. The immune system has a lot of moving parts. So tendonitis is inflamed, it's just subtle, and exercise probably is actually anti-inflammatory, more than most of the things that are supposedly anti-inflammatory, like ibuprofen or turmeric. In fact, exercise might be the only effective way to manage inflammation long term. We've known for at least 20 years that this was probably the major mechanism for how exercise prevents cardiovascular disease. That is, it's anti-inflammatory. Muscle is an endocrine organ that secretes molecules with anti-inflammatory effects, mainly when you use them. And that anti-inflammatory magic probably has effects on musculoskeletal health as well. Now, this is a footnote I'll dig into a little bit. I cited for that a 2006 paper by Peterson called The Anti-Inflammatory Effect of Exercise, Its Role in Diabetes and Cardiovascular Disease Control. And this paper is one of dozens by physiologist Dr. Peterson, Dr. Bente K. Peterson, who has studied exercise as medicine for non-communicable disease for about 30 years, and especially the myokine concept. This paper explores the early mid-2000s evidence for the hypothesis that skeletal muscle is an endocrine organ, I'm quoting now, an endocrine organ with the capacity to produce so-called myokines, i.e. cytokines and other peptides that are produced, expressed, and released by muscle fibers and exert either autocrine, paracrine, or endocrine effects. And those molecules mediate beneficial health effects against chronic diseases associated with low-grade inflammation, such as diabetes and cardiovascular diseases. So the key idea there, the key cool idea, that the hypothesis is the myokine concept, that muscles secrete anti-inflammatory molecules. And that hypothesis has generally been confirmed over the years. There's a quite a good update from Dr. Peterson in 2023. The paper titled From the Discovery of Myokines to Exercise as Medicine. It's quite concise and readable, and a nice bit of additional reading. Of all the additional reading I could recommend related to this post, I'd put that at the top. It's really cool, muscle as an endocrine organ secreting anti-inflammatories. Wow. So that's basically why we're talking about this, because that anti-inflammatory effect probably has a whole bunch of benefits that haven't been confirmed yet, including effects on, for instance, overuse injuries, on the musculoskeletal system. So, for instance, in a 2019 experiment, we're starting to get some evidence of this. Scientists mechanically stress samples of excised cartilage and cartilage cells, and the loading actually reduced inflammatory signals produced by those cells. Very cool. But, you know, petri dish. Another good example, more clinical, weightlifting is good for brain health via an anti-inflammatory effect, and so on. There's mountains of indirect evidence like this, many good clues that load management matters for preventing and treating injury, that when you get the load right, good things happen, good things that are probably mediated by anti-inflammatory effects. For instance, when a couple of dozen Norwegian students spent the summer doing progressive and individualized training, and the important part here is the progressive part, that is, you know, dose managed, they got hurt quite a bit less in the fall than students who did not prepare. So we clearly do get into trouble with both too much and too little loading. But mechanical loading in the Goldilocks zone probably does the opposite, probably helps by easing inflammation, a specific and substantive reason why exercise is medicine for distressed tendons as well as heart disease. But is there direct evidence to confirm this? Yes-ish. I keep talking about exercise, by the way, but I specifically and I mainly mean resistance training, weightlifting, because it's probably the best way to load specific tissues precisely. And so the best lines of evidence we have on this topic are about the effect of weightlifting on musculoskeletal problems, especially tendonitises. So let's talk a little bit about the science of using overused tissue to calm it down. I'll say, even though it probably doesn't need to be said, too much is not going to help. And too little is probably not going to help. We're talking about load-managed using of overused tissue, using it just the right amount. Now, sports medicine suffers from its usual bizarre shortage of exactly the evidence it most needs, but there are some examples that come close to showing that exercise, specifically resistance training, is going to help an inflamed tendon. So, for instance, we have a good quality trial that clearly showed good lasting clinical results for two kinds of exercise for Achilles tendonitis. I'm going to say a little bit more about that one. That study specifically was comparing eccentric loading. That's contracting while lengthening. So only doing the heels going down part of a heel drop and not the heel going up part. Just emphasizing, there's actually a protocol for this, the Alfredson protocol, because there's an idea that exercising eccentrically is better. This study tested that assumption and compared regular old boring strength training with eccentric training, and there was no difference. Except for one difference. There was one important difference, which was the subjects in the study actually preferred the normal training. They were more satisfied, probably because the eccentric training is tedious, but also apparently unnecessary. And by the way, this is not the only evidence of this, but the point is, it doesn't really matter how you contract the muscle, it just matters that you do contract the muscle, and if you do, either method gets you good results. All right, next up, another respectable trial of the same thing, of heel lifts, also reported good results for a different condition, for plantar fasciitis. There's also an encouraging body of evidence, this one's been studied quite a bit, that exercise therapy benefits patients with patellofemoral pain, and we also have much the same consensus about strengthening for tennis elbow. Quote, strengthening is effective in reducing pain and improving function for lateral epicondylosis, but optimal dosing is not defined. That's an important phrase. Optimal dosing is not defined as it's a problem with all of the evidence, and it, in fact, might be why the evidence is inconsistent, because there are also a bunch of discouraging studies on this topic. The four of the examples that I just gave, cherry-picked, there are discouraging studies. There are studies that show that strengthening and exercise do not help. I didn't cite them here, but they exist. But it's pretty easy to explain them away. It's entirely possible that it's just because the dosing wasn't right, because it's really easy to get it wrong. Dosing alone can probably make or break exercise as medicine for an overuse injury. And yet, it's just impossible to know what the just right dose is. It's a moving target, and it's a function of many variables, many of them unknowable in practice. Your load tolerance can vary by the day, by the hour, by the week. One of my favorite examples, I assume that we frequently have subclinical infections. Viruses halfway get to us all the time, I assume. I've never actually checked that idea with a virologist or other appropriate expert. I should. But it's pretty reasonable. It's very likely that we're always doing battle. There's always skirmishes with various pathogens, and we win a lot of those battles, and we never even know it. Just the fact that we know that lots of common infections can be asymptomatic. Mostly, I mean, I don't think anybody thinks that they're truly asymptomatic, and probably the symptom is not a good day for a workout. Like, we all have days like that. It's like, I just feel like shit today, and I don't know why. Well, that's one of many reasons why. Or you didn't get, enough deep sleep the night before, and you're not even conscious of it. I fairly frequently have that weird sleep phenomenon where you dream that you're awake, and you wake up and you feel dreadful, even though, according to your sleep tracker, you did just fine. I assume the opposite is possible as well. I can't remember. But anyway, blah, blah, blah. The point is, there's a lot of reasons why our load tolerance fluctuates over time. It is dancing to all kinds of drummers that we don't know about, can't hear. So we don't know what the right load is on any given day with any given workout. It is really, truly a moving target. We have good reasons to try, though. And even if it doesn't work, exercise, as always, it's got its major general benefits as a great consolation prize. If you're going to fail, fail fitter. You know, resistance training is a terrific rehab tool. Not so much because strength is inherently therapeutic, though it might be. That's a separate conversation. There might be reasons why strength is protective that have nothing to do with metabolism and immunity and inflammation. But with regards to regulating dosage, it is a great way to do that. It can be tidy and precise, and you really want that when you're doing your best to get the dosage right. You can't control a lot of the other variables, but you can at least control that. Common anti-inflammatory medications, like popping an ibuprofen for your Achilles tendonitis, probably not biologically relevant to the rather subtle chronic inflammation that characterizes these injuries. But exercise is presumably highly relevant. It gives the body the only medicine that was possible for millions of years of evolution. Our job is just to tinker with the dosage, which probably means being more patient in the early stages than we want to be in many, many cases. But then you break out the weights for their anti-inflammatory effect. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.